So I'd love to take a moment just to introduce you to Mary. If you don't yet know the extraordinary Mary Morrissey, she is an international best-selling author, CEO, consultant, visionary, and a specialist in empowerment. For more than 50 years, she's been changing lives through her life-changing books and talks, events, programs, and certification trainings. She's the founder of the Brave Thinking Institute. And through her transformational coaching training, life-changing books and programs, she has reached and empowered millions around the world. In 2019, she wrote Brave Thinking, The Art and Science of Dream Building, which is a culmination of her years of experience in transforming lives. And I think what I most appreciate about Mary and getting to know her, it's one thing to talk the talk. It's another thing to walk the walk. And I think there are a few people in this world who live and embody what they teach and share at the deepest level, even when it's hard, even when it's really hard to do so. And so I want to invite you to join me to give it up for Mary. If you know her, send her love and appreciation in the chat. But there's no one that I would rather be here to be in a conversation today about how we can access self-confidence and power and courage and being brave during these extraordinary times in Mary. So welcome, Mary. Welcome to Women Rising. We're so happy to have you with us.
Hi, Claire. Hi, and everyone. I'm just so thrilled and honored to be here.
Thank you so much. So welcome. So we are here. We have over 40,000 women registered for the series, and we sent out a pre-event survey. And this is one thing I was speaking about this morning. Never before have I seen women feel exhausted and overstretched and burnt out and going through transitions, relationship transitions, career transitions, right? In a way that, you know, I kind of feel like there's this feeling of like, I just have nothing left. I'm so overextended. I've nothing left to give. And at the very same time, we're feeling this impulse to rise. We're feeling an impulse to connect with our purpose, to get on purpose. And, you know, so we're having conversations today and on these different topics, you know, trying to get into the very center of these tensions, right? So I'd love to invite you just to start by sharing with us what you see at this time, at this moment, is really, you know, the possibility for women. You've been a teacher and trainer for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. You have such a deep experience and such a deep reference for, you know, the inner lives. But what do you see as the possibility, and how do we begin to tap into it?
Well, thanks, Claire. Thank you for hosting this for all of us and the amazing things that I know you do that people can say yes to themselves that will help us way past this conference. So I know that you're going to make an offer later, and I want to say up front that I've known you for many, many years, and I've watched you yourself evolve, but also your caring and deep purpose of helping others evolve, and it's one of a kind.
Thank you.
So, yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing about this life is we have its polarity. We have this and we have that. There's the part of us that wants to go forward, and then there's a part of us that's arguing for why we can't, why now's not a good time, I don't have the money. So both of those are in our human nature. So the part that wants to go forward and the part that would argue for why we can't, or we feel insecure, or, oh my gosh, and we tend to look at everything that's on our plate. And it is on our plate. It's not like we want to deny conditions that can seem overwhelming. But there's another part of our nature, and that's our spiritual nature. There is a part of us that is more than the conditions we're facing. And when we try to face the conditions that seem overwhelming and bigger than us, without connecting to the part of us that is always more than any circumstance, situation, or condition, we can feel minuscule. in the presence of problems, situations, challenges in the world, and can move into a state of hopelessness or overwhelm, whatever name, where we are in that. But there's another approach. There's another, and I know you train people in empowerment. So when we're trying by our own personal power to overcome the challenges of our own world, it just seems bigger than us. I've had lots of experience with that, not only in the trainings I've done over the 40 years with people from all over the world, but in my own life. There have been things in my own life that seemed way bigger than me. But those were doorways also that led me into transformation, that led me into understanding some of the simple tools for overriding that when it's right here in our hands. And I know that every single one of us has that power. We didn't create ourselves. We're not even breathing ourselves. This presence, call it whatever you want, energy, life, God, spirit, the universe, as our opening song spoke about. But we're part of it. It lives and moves and has its being as each and every one of us. And we live and move and have our being in it. So it's sending signs and signals for us today of there's more life for us, but we have to get in harmony with that. And there's ways to do that, including attending this conference.
Well, I love what you're saying. And it's that way of thinking and that way of orienting that is like, so if we just orient to what is in front of us, right, and what we can see and what we can feel, and kind of we're approaching things in a very linear way, versus we're interpreting things through a set of higher principles, mm-hmm. right? So there's a way that we can kind of be in fear, and we can be in reaction, and we can be interpreting and responding to life inside of that, or we can make a choice to shift our awareness to experience life in these, you know, kind of higher spiritual principles. Yeah. So a lot of us know that conceptually, Mary, right? We kind of, you know, we believe that we're one, we believe that there's a higher power. You're someone who lives this, like as a, you know, your circuitry is so wired to respond to and navigate life, like for real, inside this higher truth. So how do we, you know, how did that get so deeply inside of you? Was there an incident or a turning point? Like, what was the story or the moment about how this became like a new North Star and center in how you're navigating life that is unshakable?
I'll tell quickly two stories that were really seminal in my life, Claire, in being who I am today. First of which was in high school. I had a high school experience like most young girls dream about. In my junior year of high school, I had a lead in the senior play. I was homecoming princess, class president. And my high school boyfriend came home on spring break from college. We'd been dated already 3 years. I got pregnant, and May 1, I'm telling my mom and dad that I am now pregnant. It's the end of my junior year in high school. Got a month left of my junior year. We have a very hasty 10-person wedding. This is 1966. A couple weeks later, the principal calls me to his office and says, "Are these rumors I'm hearing about you true?" And I said, "If the rumors are that I'm pregnant and married, then that order, then yes." And he's putting his head in his hands and he says, "Mary, you have great honors and terrific academics, but you will not be allowed to return here for your senior year. It would be totally inappropriate for a pregnant girl to get mixed in with the normal girls. And if you do want to get a high school diploma, there's a place you can get that." He told me where in Portland it was. It was in a place I hadn't been allowed to drive in after dark. And by the way, it wasn't during the daytime. It was after dark. It was in the evening. And that was where the pregnant girls and the delinquent boys were allowed to complete their high school work. And I did want to get a high school diploma because my dream had been to become a teacher. I just wanted to be a teacher. So I didn't see this as a stop sign. I saw it as a detour that I was pregnant, was going to have this baby. And so December, my son was born. May, I graduate from Washington Evening High School. And in July, I'm in an intensive care ward in a Portland hospital, having been diagnosed with fatal kidney disease. This is 1967. There is no transplants. There's this. We're very early in our development now for helping kidney patients. One kidney was totally destroyed with nephritis, kidney disease. The other had 50% destruction, active nephritis. In 1967, this is a death sentence. I was told that maybe I would have 6 months to live if I could sustain the surgery to remove the right kidney. And the God of my upbringing was not a friendly place to go when you felt like you had really screwed up. And in my mind, I had really screwed up. I got kicked out of high school. My friends I grew up with, their mothers got together and decided they couldn't see me anymore, like what I had was contagious or something. So I lost my school, my friends, my reputation in that school, and I'm relegated to a school with delinquents. And those considered to be delinquents like me. And I just think, well, I'm being punished. I'm a bad girl. I'm just being punished by this God out there for being a bad girl. And I'm not even going to get to raise my little boy. And I adored him, you know, as any mom does. And I'm terrified. Finally, the night before the surgery was scheduled, a woman walked in my room and identified herself as a chaplain offering prayer for people going to have surgery the next day. Did I want prayer? And I said, okay. She pulled her chair next to my bed, didn't do anything that in my upbringing, my Baptist upbringing, looked like prayer. She just talked with me and she asked me some questions. And she asked me, you know, would you be willing to tell me what's been going on in your life the last year or two? So I told her my story. And then she looked at me compassionately and she said, Mary, everything's created twice. I had zero idea what she was talking about. And I got this quizzical look on my face, I'm sure. And she said, you know this. Actually, everybody knows it. Almost no one knows the power of knowing this. The bed you're laying on, the nightgown you're wearing, the sheet covering you, the walls, the ceiling, the floor, all the machinery you're hooked up to. First, it had to be a thought before it could be a thing. And now that you're considering how everything's created twice, could you consider the possibility? Because I hear how much you love your little boy, but I also hear how much you've been hating yourself. You feel like you shamed your school, you shamed your family, you shamed yourself. Could it be possible that that toxicity and those thoughts actually could have something to do with the toxicity that's rampaging your body and threatening your life? Well, this is 1967. There's no mind-body clinic.
Wow, that's amazing.
We don't know this in the general popular understandings of how things work. We know nothing about vibrational medicine or, you know, any of this. So could you believe that there's some connection there? And it was, I mean, nobody I knew thought this way. And then she said, so if you could live, what would you do? I raised my little boy and I'd become a teacher. And so she said, I'm going to condense this here because there's a little more.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter. She then gave me a tool of what to do to change the vibration. She didn't say, we're going to change the vibration in you. The disease exists on this frequency. When you're on this frequency, that disease doesn't exist anymore. It would be my way of saying it today. She didn't say those words to me. She just said, here's what we want to do with your mind. Because if you keep thinking self-loathing thoughts, you're going to have results that are not what you want. Because that vibration is not expansive. It's very contractive. And your body's bearing witness to that. And I'm thinking, she's either crazy or maybe the smartest person I've met. I couldn't tell. And no doctor was saying there was any hope. So when she gave me even a glimmer of hope, she said, I absolutely believe that if you will do what I tell you to do, you will see your health improve. And I believe you can get well. So here's what I want you to do after they take the kidney tomorrow. She said, we're going to do a prayer here, or I think she called it even a visualization. And we're going to imagine that we're scooping up all that toxicity that's in your body. And we're going to put it in the one kidney that's going to get removed. And when it gets removed, it will be gone from you. And so when you come back from the surgery, you're going to have some pain. Your mind's going to go to the pain. After that eases, your mind is going to want to go down the well-worn thoughts that you've been thinking. This is important for all of us here. We have well-worn thoughts that we're thinking. Some of those are expansive. Some of those are contractive. When we start to feel like we're not enough, or there's not enough to go around, or good things don't come to me easily, or thoughts that create a pattern that has an energy pattern to it that must and does reproduce itself. So she said, here's what I want you to do. So if you could live, you would raise your little boy and you'd become a teacher. And then she gave me three images. She said, the minute you start to notice a self-loathing thought, interrupt it and say, no, that left with the kidney. And then immediately imagine walking your little boy into kindergarten, feel his warm hand in your hand. And he's in kindergarten and you're alive and you're healthy and he's there. Just put that in your mind. But imagine yourself walking him in. Then hear the click, click, click of your heels and around the corner, and there's your classroom and your teacher. Then fast forward in your mind and you're in a big auditorium or stadium and there's all these caps and gowns down on the floor and you hear your son's name called and he goes across and shakes the principal's hand and gets his high school diploma and your feelings just bursting with pride and happiness. Your teaching career is growing. Fast forward and you're sitting in the front row of a wedding and your son's getting married to the love of his life and you're the mother of the groom and you think back to all the many moments of your privilege of being his mom and your teaching career is flourishing. And she said, just keep doing that. I must have been an unconscious competent because I don't remember actively doing this thing, but I know I did. I have slight, you know, it's been 50 plus years now, slight memories of that. But within 2 weeks after that surgery, my numbers were stable enough that they said, maybe you're gonna have a little more time than we thought. So I went home in an ambulance. I had to go to the urologist 3 times a week for testing. But my numbers not only stabilized, they just started to slightly improve and slightly improve. And in my mind, I'm imagining where I might go to college. And I didn't have the strength to walk into the community college and get a schedule. But I asked my mother one day coming home from the doctor if she would just go get the schedule so I could imagine taking these classes. And I, within 5 months, I'm sitting in the conference room at the hospital with the surgeon, all of the principals, you know, the specialist, the kidney doctor, and they're shaking their heads and they're saying, we have no science for what's going on with that one kidney. And the surgeon said, I saw it, literally. It was pockmarked, shriveled, about 50% of a normal size and very sick. But it's functioning as a whole perfect kidney right now. We don't know how long this will last or if it will last, but whatever you've been doing, keep doing it. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just doing what she told me to, but I was really unconscious about it. I didn't have the awareness to do it intentionally yet. And then a couple years went by, then I got myself into undergraduate school. And when I was there, some things occurred in fall of 1971 that I felt like I'd walked out of an attic in myself, that I'd been living in this. My whole life up until then, Claire, had been, life is happening to me. And I didn't know that I was generally running a victim mindset that circumstances happened to me and what people did controlled who I could be or not be and was a victim of what was coming at me. And I felt like I found my way to the front door of myself and I had the authority and the right to choose my response. I didn't have to think those thoughts. I could think different thoughts. I could make different choices, even though the pattern of how I'd been raised would tell me to think this or do that. It just opened all kinds of doors for me. And I was like a thirsty sponge. I wanted to find everything I could find in the field of transformation, studied for a decade before I ever started training it. Once I had more of this, I wanted everybody I knew to have it because it was liberating. It meant you didn't have to wait for circumstances to change until you could feel better. It was a different understanding about how to have circumstances in your life without circumstances having you. Up until then, I couldn't be happy until that thing got changed out there. And then when it got changed, I could feel peace or feel happy again. And so that's been my work in the world all these years.
I want to just highlight some things that you said that I just want to underscore and kind of bring back because I think it's so profound and so important. One of the things that I hear from women all the time is I want to have more confidence. I want to have more confidence. I want to have more power to be able to create the future. And in what you're sharing, there's something that just struck me in your incredible story about how, you know, confidence comes from a sense of empowerment, right? Like that when you had a sense that you had the power to create this future and you could see this future and you were not a victim of your circumstances, that you were someone who has the power to create your future, how that then gave you the confidence to begin to show up in new ways to create that future.
Baby steps, how you could start taking different steps. Exactly. You know, interesting, when you come home at night to your house, your apartment, and you walk in and it's dark, and you walk over to the light switch and you turn it on, you're not surprised when it comes on, you're surprised when it doesn't, because you understand that the house got, or the apartment got, wired to code. And so you're confident the light is going to come on, even if you don't know how it all works. But we think we have to put our confidence always just in ourselves. We can put our confidence in knowing that there are invisible laws that govern, just like the law of electricity. That was an invisible law. And as humans, as our species, just a little over 100 years ago, we wanted light after dark. We had to light a fire or an oil lamp. But once we, and Thomas Edison didn't invent the law of electricity, he discovered how to work with it the way it works. And the work you do in the world, the work I do in the world, has been helping people understand how to work with the invisible laws that govern the results we're having, without it, so that we can transform that, like, this happened to me. Yes, it happened, but actually it happened with me, because my perception of it, my response to it, has something to do with the outcome I'm experiencing. Yes, the thing itself might have really been horrific, but you look at 10 people who had a very similar thing in their life, and they're not 2 years, 5 years in the same place. The way we respond to and what we do with things that happen in our life. I had an experience in my middle 40s. I had been married to my children's father. We had four kids together for 27 years. We were so young when we got married. We were never on the same wavelength. He's a really good guy. He's been a great dad. But we parted in midlife, and when I was about 40. And then, a little older maybe, but... and then a couple of years later, I fell in love with this man who turned out to be, within a few years, I discovered that he embezzled money from the work I had spent 23 years building, other businesses. He ended up going to prison. But in the midst of that, all of those businesses, I had to close everything down, and I lost everything I had built. And it was left with a $10 million debt to people that had invested in it that I cared about. And all the attorneys said, this is what bankruptcy's for. I just spiritually couldn't feel right about that. So I made a commitment to repay that money or die trying. And that was in my middle 40s. And I didn't know, I mean, now I could start a new business. And that had been in the nonprofit world. So I came into the profit. My friends, Marianne Williams and Wayne Dyer, I mean, others who were saying, you know, Jack Canfield, you know, come if you want to repay that money, but or you can make more impact if you do it this way. So I was getting help figuring out how to do this in the profit-making world. And this is where it really, when you talk about, and this occurred to me at this time. I heard one day, I'm meditating, and I heard, Mary, the content of your life is the curriculum of your evolution. Mm-hmm. It's perfectly designed for you at this moment in your life. This looks like a great big huge problem, but it's not bigger than the infinite. It's not bigger than the mind that knows all things. There, you can't have a dream or a desire without there being a way to do it. You may not know the way to do it, but there are ways to connect to the intelligence that does know. And I began to go much, much deeper. I was feeling so much pressure from the outside world. I mean, just all of the failure of leadership that I felt I had done by letting him mess with the integrity of what I had built, and the pain of losing all that, and the deception that I felt, and that it would be very tempting to move into victim position. But I had to keep reminding myself, this didn't happen to me, this happened with me somehow. And if there's the idea that there's good in everything, then who I become out of this is completely in my hands. It's not determined by the circumstance. I have an opportunity here. It took me 14 years to turn that to a zero balance. But that 14 years was seminal. I wouldn't have developed what I've developed, except for the challenges that are here that have been in my life and the opportunities that I've taken. So I know the confidence piece, which is where we're focusing today. If we want to generate confidence in ourselves, part of it, I believe the real confidence is when you know that you're part of something, that you didn't create yourself, that every single day when we open our eyes for the very first time of that day, it's however you relate to life itself. It's like life is saying to you, I'm giving you the greatest gift I have to give you. And that's today. I'm giving you this day of life. You'll never get it again, not in eternity. And it's completely up to you. Nobody gets to think your thoughts today but you. No one gets to choose today what you will do with this day, how much gratitude you will live in, or how much resistance you will bring. Those are all energies that we get to weave the existence of our day with. So all of us here who were, I don't believe anyone's here today who isn't called to a greater work in the world. I don't think you're, the very fact that you're even interested in this, there's something wonderful happening in you. It may be tempting to look at all the things that seem in the way, and where will the money come from, and where will this start with reminding yourself that you're not alone in this. Mm-hmm. You can't even breathe yourself by yourself or have your heart beat one time under your own personal power. So this, we've been part of this anyway, but we can begin to, I think, pay more attention to it.
Well, so much that I hear you say that I just want to also underscore and highlight. And again, I want to reflect back to you. And this is one of the things that has so moved and inspired and impressed me about who you are as a person, what we're talking about. It's one thing to kind of talk about spiritual principle or know about spiritual principle. It's another thing to live it when it's hard. Right. To live, right. So, and this is where, you know, I love this idea about being brave. I heard a great definition of courage recently, that courage is doing the right thing, even when you're scared.
That's exactly right.
And
it's not about waiting till you're not scared.
Right. And I just hear that. And the relationship between like knowing what the right thing is, even when, because you had plenty of reason to feel victimized by your circumstances.
Yeah,
right? This kidney thing, the husband, the deadbeat ex-husband who did the like there's lots of things to pointedly look at to when, you know, and this is what I think is difficult about this time, because we've lost businesses or we've lost relationships, and these have been through no fault of our own. These are circumstances that are bigger than us, with the pandemic, with the instability, like, right? And it's very easy to feel hurt or that life doesn't support us or to feel wronged or any of those things. And what I just hear and see in just your example is like, even in the midst of that, there's no power in that conversation of I'm at the effect of this, rather than stepping into and seeing, I'm going to own my power as a creator, and I'm going to stand and put a stake in the ground, even if I can't feel it. And even if there's no evidence for it, this is a life positive universe, and I'm supported, and I'm going to line up with what's true and what's right. I'm going to make choices. I'm going to navigate. And there's a way that the flow of your life and your destiny emerges in that way of navigating. That's just so powerful.
That's right. Beautifully said also. I'm a believer in having very short pity parties. You realize, oh my gosh. Like any party, it can have a beginning and an end.
That's so great.
Short pity party. And then pull myself up and say, okay. What can
our,
I?
Our friend Ariel does that. She says, you have 5 minutes to have, like, feel bad and sorry for yourself, and that's it. It's over.
That's right.
Well, and so how do we cultivate confidence, you know, moving forward? Just your, you know, any tools or tips or wisdom in the time that we have left, and how we can be cultivating this, right? Because this doesn't land in us just by thinking it. It's a practice and an ongoing practice of cultivation.
That's right. And I think deep down, one of the key elements of that is self-talk. is the way we talk to ourselves. When we are going to bed at night, what are we saying to ourselves? Are we saying, you know, if you review your day, there were moments when you spoke up, maybe you did something, you caused yourself to get out of bed when part of you just wanted to stay with the covers over your head. And, you know, and you say, good for you. I mean, you have what it takes. When you wake up in the morning, you know, here I go again, I've got what it takes. And you're saying words to yourself. And as you just said, Claire, and it's an important point, even if you don't feel it, many of us think we have to feel, but feelings are secondary. When the vibration of the words, and you keep saying them, and your feelings are going to follow that. And you will feel it. Maybe not right away, but you will feel it over time. And you will start to feel more confident. And you'll go, where did that even come from? Part of it is you, the way you are working together versus waiting for the performance to happen or the accolade to happen or the money to come in, and then we get to feel good about ourselves. We can choose to start building up an inner reserve of being a person that's in a growth path. Mm-hmm. And I saw some of the chats coming through, you know, there's no failure except for not getting back up and different things. I think, you know, our wonderful women who are here know this.
Mm, beautiful. So how we talk to ourselves, how we listen to ourselves, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, I'm going to believe that I'm living in a life positive universe. I'm going to believe that I'm a powerful creator. I'm going to know that whatever is happening to me in my circumstances, there's also me, I can control, you know, who I'm going to be in response to it. That's where I have power.
Yes. And it's okay when you say, I'm going to believe that I'm in a self-positive universe, or I'm going to experiment for 90 days, believe
it. I love that.
Because sometimes, you know, you don't change a belief just like that. I'm going to experiment for the next 90 days. I'm going to cause myself to be thinking these thoughts. And then at 90 days, I'll stop and I'll evaluate who I've become, what's going on, how confident I do feel. Is there a rise in that? And I can adjust then to the words I'm using and what I'm telling myself and the actions I'm taking. I have never made forward progress where I wasn't really part of me afraid. Mm-hmm. The first time I got up to speak, I've been a professional speaker now for 40 plus years. But the first time I got up to speak, it was in my student teaching era. And I was to get up in front of a group of sixth graders and read a spelling lesson. It was not much creative speaking in reading 20 words. I was so nervous that my knees were knocking under I did not yet understand how to remove myself from self-focus and care enough about the kids that my energy could go reach to them or to an audience or to an individual. Mm-hmm. But the only way I got there was because I did it afraid. I did it afraid and afraid. And when I signed the agreement, I want to pay this $10 million back, I did it afraid. But I believed by the time I'd gotten to that moment, I can't have an idea. Where do ideas even come from? Where do desires come from? They're part of the infinite scope of all that is. You tap into one, and actually you can tap into any idea. Some ideas are really uplifting and expansive, and some of them are very contractive and diminishing. So it's the ideas that we move into and vibrate with that become the experience we're having in the moment. Mm-hmm. So confidence.
So powerful.
Yes.
So practicing confidence moving forward, right? So I think this would be one of the final questions I would ask you. What are the steps? Like those moments when we're scared, those moments when we're disconnected, those moments when we feel afraid. Mm-hmm. If you could whisper in each and every woman's ear in those moments about where to focus and what to do, what would that be?
A couple of things I would say. First of all, it's very challenging to believe in yourself by yourself. That's why I'm going to encourage and whisper in the ear of every woman here. If you have a chance to work with Claire Zammit and I think there's a 7-week opportunity. In 7 weeks, you have enough time to establish a whole new set point for yourself. So get support, and your believing will follow. When you have someone who believes for you, and you can borrow their belief and ride on that, that's what I did. I borrowed that woman's belief who came to my bedside. She believed it. I didn't believe it. None of the doctors believed it, but I could tell she believed it. And so I just rode on her belief long enough to see it for myself. And I just know that there's a new level of confidence seeking every single one of us, no matter what our conditions are or circumstances. So one of the things you can tell yourself, this was many, many years ago at the advent really of modern psychology. Mm-hmm. There was one particular psychiatrist in Europe who's was having amazing results with his patients. And Freud and Jung and others were, you know, amazed at people who'd had long-term trauma, long-term difficulties. What was he doing that was different? And when they interviewed him, his name, Emil Coué, he said, I tell every single patient exactly the same thing. Every day, at least three times, look yourself in the mirror and say, every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. And even if you don't believe it, you say it anyway. Every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. And there began to be a shift, because auto-suggestion, everything's created twice. So once you start having that be a major nourishment that you're giving yourself every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. And then your mind will go, well, not here, not here. And just every day in every way, I am getting better and better. Even if you don't believe it, the believing will start to follow that. The feeling will start to build. And you turn around, do a 90-day experiment with it. You turn around and you go, wow, I am feeling more confident. I'm feeling better in my own skin. I'm sleeping better. I wake rested. I've got new ideas. It's life at a greater level working in us.
Mm. Beautiful, so powerful. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today. And, you know, your teachings are so impactful and so powerful. And I would say likewise back for, you know, those who have an opportunity to work with you. And I think what's so impactful is the role modeling of this new relationship to life that we need to step into. And I just want to say thank you for each and every moment when it was hard, when you were scared, when you were by yourself, where you tapped into courage at a time where there weren't so many role models living in these new ways and being a pioneer. And what you've opened up for millions and millions of people throughout your career is absolutely extraordinary by following your own path and higher truth and commitment to service and integrity. And it's not just what you've said and shared today, it's who you are that I can feel impacting and uplifting each and every one of us here in our circle. So thank you so much for joining us, Mary. And
thank you, Claire.
Can we do something kind of a bit fun and playful to be able to give you some energy back? Okay. Just to end. So I would love to invite you just to hold into your, just to connect in your own heart with whatever it is that's your own intention of what you're creating next, and let us send some energy and love back to you, knowing that we are just seeing you in the center of our circle, and we are appreciating you so much. We are receiving from you your wisdom, your love, your example to lift us up, and all of that energy, we are just sending back to you tenfold. We're powering each other in this circle. We're sending it back to you tenfold for whatever you're creating next, for whatever is in your heart, the next level of your own vision and leadership and impact and contribution. And we are so grateful for you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I, you, and everyone here.
So much love, Mary. Much love. Thank you so much.